Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
And welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, big changes happening in the commercial property sector amid the need for more homes and more health services. We are in a moment of opportunity. People need homes. There is also a need for premises for food deliveries and medical services. Lots of former shops, offices, and small industrial units stand empty. These buildings should be the answer to such demands, but it's not that simple. If you are thinking of buying or investing in a flat in a high street or mixed-use development, that's part home, shops, and offices, do you really want a takeaway outlet on the ground floor? How do lenders view such properties? How can investors make the most of this new environment? Could the tenant for your unit be a medical company providing the aesthetic procedures that people are seeking as they emerge from the pandemic? Once again, I'm joined by Dominic Agace, CEO of Winkworth, and also by Adam Stackhouse from Winkworth's commercial division, and also by Anthony Emerson from Trinity Financial, the mortgage broker. Welcome to you all. First of all, Dominic, I want you to give us a couple of opening thoughts on what's happening in this sector. What's going on in that part of the commercial market that focuses on smaller units and shops?
Well, I think we may have passed the nadir of commercial property and that sector of the market. We're looking on a sort of macro picture at economic growth, a very strong labour market, businesses expanding this year with lots set to grow new premises. We've got record levels of savings for shoppers to go and use in the high street. And we've got a pent-up desire to socialise. So I think there's some factors that are very supportive of the commercial market now that we're hopefully through the sort of cycle of lockdowns that we've been over the last 18 months. I think what we saw in that period was obviously there's an element of online growth of sales that appears to be slowing now, and the need for a physical location hasn't gone away. Certainly the hyperlocalism of the last few years has supported local services, and perhaps whilst the usage has changed, the requirement to have physical locations hasn't.
So we should all say hurrah. The high street isn't going to die after all?
I think it's not going to die after all. I think it needed to evolve, I suppose, with, you know, certainly clothing perhaps going on in secondary locations in more suburban areas going online. But it is city centres, which, you know, footfall's returning to. It is an activity and it's something people enjoy doing. So I think perhaps it's more important for an investor to consider, well, as always, a property, location, but also the end usage than perhaps of the investment than it has been before. But there may be some which is superfluous to the current demand and what people are looking for in those physical retail units. But I certainly don't think it's the end, and I think we might see some growth this year.
Do you think investors have really caught on to these opportunities yet?
I think in a sort of yield-hungry world, anything that can offer a yield is incredibly popular and people really want to invest in. And that's been the case for several years. So I think investors like the appeal of a yield on a commercial mixed-use premises. You know, smaller scale, you can put it in your SIP as a personal private investment for retirement later. I think it hasn't gone away, and property will retain its value to investors because of that yield. And looking forward, I think that will stay ahead of any sort of interest rates that are slowly paced over the next couple of years.
I want to turn this over now to Adam and Anthony to find out what's happening on the ground. So, Adam, there's a new kind of tenant for shops and smaller units. Tell us all about them.
Yes, Anne. Well, the High Street feels energised, and Use Class E has been a real revelation to the work that we're doing. We've suddenly found that there's been a huge increase in demand from specialist medical services to include dentistry and cosmetic treatments. And a lot of these businesses are moving out of large, out-of-town private health centres to offer a more personal and bespoke service. Now, some of these operators have developed fantastic reputations during lockdown through online feedback and positive reports from people looking to improve the way they look. And they've decided to invest in the High Street. And I've noticed that four of our deals in the West 8 and West 11 postcodes are all to this type of operator.
Can you spell out a bit more what Class E actually means for those not really conversant with the language of the commercial property sector?
Well, it makes the High Street, the retail sector in particular, incredibly elastic. It gives you that flexibility to operate at different levels of business provision. And it means that you're not restricted to specific and narrow use classes that traditionally local authorities have been very slow in allowing you to adjust. So, for example, medical services would have had a huge number of constraints placed upon them if they wanted to provide local anaesthetics and personal medical treatments. Now you need to simply inform the local authority of your intentions. Very unlikely that they can object. And as long as you have consent from the freeholder, you can open for business.
Can you tell us a bit more about this new demand for medical and aesthetic services? Is this something that lockdown has done to us? Do we all care that much more about how we look?
It's hard to say on my part how people are feeling, but I can tell you how operators are feeling. And when I look at their order book and the urgency with which they want to transact, we had a medical company travel down from the north of England. They had an order book in excess of £400,000, which they wanted to commence work on immediately. They took a premises on a sealed bid in W10 for the purposes of providing cosmetic treatments, and they exchanged on the sale and lease of the property within 10 days, which is quite unheard of in the commercial sector.
So that's one new source of tenant for these premises. Do you see any other new types of tenant emerging?
Well, two types, really, that we're seeing a massive uptake in demand. And I do want to point out that as the retailers in clothing and fashion have moved away from the High Street, we've recently had two deals where we've got people looking to offer a clothing and accessory rental business, which is incredibly interesting. And we've got one property under offer in Fulham at the moment where a company wants to provide high-end bespoke fashion on a to hire basis. So they need to be local to the community so they can go around, pick up the trousers or handbag they want to use that evening and drop it off the next day. The other type of business that needs to be acknowledged is the urgency for immediate food deliveries. And this is not just takeaways, but also for people that are spending time in the kitchen and cooking and finding out that they've run out of ingredients. There are companies out there such as Jiffy who will deliver products within 30 minutes to your door. And those companies are looking for units that are located in prime locations for immediate delivery to a densely populated area in central London.
So if we wanted to make a list of all the changes in society and the economy that are happening, we ought just to walk down our local High Street. How can investors make the most of this kind of revolution happening in these areas?
Well, I think property is often described as a staircase. So when you walk down the High Street, this information won't be immediately apparent. We're talking about deal flow that we're doing, and it will take some time for these businesses to open and appear in front of local residents. From an investor's point of view, I think it's worth acknowledging the fact that the High Street is stable. It's feeling energised because of Use Class E. We've got strong backing from the Housing Minister in terms of restoring footfall into the community. And I think from an investor's point of view, despite the backdrop of rising interest rates, a lot of these businesses have rock solid covenants. They're going to pay their rents on time and they've got full order books.
I'd like to talk for a bit about mixed use developments, those where you've got a mix of homes, offices, shops, maybe other small industrial units. If you were thinking about buying a place now in a nice, busy, lively environment, should you buy in one of these? You've got everything on the doorstep, haven't you?
I think my immediate response is yes, you should. You're going to be in the heart of the community. There's going to be plenty of convenience on your doorstep. You're going to be able to commute into your place of work with relative ease. So the headline answer is yes, you should. However, I would urge people buying private homes in mixed-use developments to find out from the developer what their intentions are with the ground floor retail and office spaces. Because backtracking to our comments on use class E, this huge flexibility that the property owner is now able to engage in with regards to what type of business will appear on the ground floor can negatively influence the enjoyment of residents if you get a large number of fast food or delivery type businesses parked beneath your apartment. So I think, yes, mixed use development's a definite place to buy in. Equally, caveat emptor, please look long and hard at the use class intentions of the developer on the ground floor.
So message to anybody thinking of buying in one of these developments, ask whether there's going to be a chicken shop on the ground floor. Now, I want to take this more broadly now and talk about the whole of the legislation that's already happened to help revive our high streets, to help turn those disused buildings into homes or put them to some other use. How do you think that is proceeding? And if you were to send an email to Michael Gove, the Housing Secretary, about the changes that could be made, what would be in it?
Well, firstly, am I intellectual enough to impress Michael Gove? But as a housing minister, it is a revelation to have him on board. He's a real thinker. He invests time in understanding the background to situations. And yes, there is an immediate need to deliver 300,000-400,000 homes every calendar year in this country. But we need to be mindful that the standards have started to slip. And I think reading between the lines of the early work that he's done, he is already indicating to house builders and developers that a lot of the stock they're holding, which historically were warehouse units and large out-of-town office suites, is incredibly unsuitable for modern living standards. These buildings were not designed to accommodate private homes, and they have an abundance of issues in relation to heat retention, general ambiance, the way the space will flow, privacy. There's an abundance of things that Michael Gove seems to be looking at to try and slow down this surge to create quite unimpressive and potentially uncomfortable private dwellings out of town.
Thank you for that, Adam. Anthony, I'd like to bring you in here. What's the attitude of lenders towards commercial premises? Will investors who need finance get it? And how about those people who are thinking of buying a mixed-use development?
There's a number of points to cover off there, Anne. Will investors get the finance that they want? Most certainly. It very much depends on the clientele, you know, the kind of property that they're looking to buy and the use for that property. We have a lot of commercial mortgages and things like that going through for developments where people are buying up buildings, change of use, knock it down, rebuild it in a different style, and that's proving quite popular, and lenders are quite happy to lend on that. To Adam's point earlier, when I speak to the commercial lenders and I say to them, what's high on your wish list? It's all of the medical, dental, pharmacy kinds of businesses, because they are time tested. They always succeed, according to the people we've discussed with, and they're quite happy to lend at quite high loan to values. Mixed-use developments are quite tricky because the ground floor use does change the lender's desire as to whether or not they want to lend. Lenders are worried about the desirability of that property should they repossess it. What impact would that new developmental use would be? You said about a chicken shop. Chicken shop comes with antisocial hours. It comes with a, you know, a constant smell, and it comes with quite a high fire risk. So it changes the desirability of every property above that. Having said that, depends on location. Central London, you know, or any central big town, etc. If it's a desirable property and the lender thinks that they can sort of take it, they will take a better view of it rather than being somewhere on the outskirts.
Let's talk about the mortgage market as a whole. Buy-to-let landlords, are they getting the money they need if they want to expand their portfolios?
Buy-to-let landlords are having a rough time of it. There's been a number of changes in, you know, the taxation, the rental stress test that the lenders apply, and also the classification of a portfolio landlord as anybody who has four or more properties. It seems to me that the sort of changes have classed professional landlords, and that's people who are doing things properly to the right levels and everything else. They've almost made them the villain because they've taken over too many residential properties, therefore preventing the average person from being able to buy a property. And I think the intention of the government with those changes was to encourage more of those properties to be released to owner-occupiers. But the truth of the matter is that the lending's always been there for owner-occupiers, but there's also a requirement to have a certain level of housing stock that is flexible, that people can rent, that people can live in an area before they decide to invest and move to it. The buy-to-let landlord who is, you know, smaller, anything under sort of four properties, lenders are quite happy to lend to them because they are finding ways of using the restrictions and being more flexible on them. So if you are willing to take a 5-year fixed rate on a buy-to-let mortgage, the lender will lend you a larger sum of money because they can use a slightly lower stress test. If you are a high income earner and you have a relatively low residential mortgage, we're able to use your surplus earned income to be able to top up the lack of rental yield that you might have had according to the calculation, which they call top slicing. And that allows some of the properties in better areas to get up towards the 75% loan to value maximum that we normally face.
So it's a tricky market out there for some buy-to-let landlords. The inevitable question, Anthony, what's going to happen to interest rates this year?
My personal opinion is that we are seeing the trend towards the thought that inflation is no longer a temporary problem. You know, it isn't just due to the surge in gas prices. We are seeing prices go up across the board. Even in your local takeaway sandwich shop, you're going to be seeing prices changing relatively swiftly. The Bank of England has got a very tricky job at the moment. They're trying to balance the economy and the requirements of the economy to have cheap funding and available cash to support that growth with the fact that inflation is causing them to have to try and keep a cap on that as well. Rates at the moment, we believe, will keep on rising. And we're thinking that it's going to be at as slow a pace as possible because of the fact that they're trying to balance that economic requirement for cheaper cash. I would say to you, if you're a homeowner and your mortgage is anywhere within 6 months of its expiry, you need to be speaking to, you know, a mortgage broker as soon as possible because of the fact that if you can lock into a rate now, remortgage offers tend to be valid for around about 6 months. You can at least secure something now for the future, and 5-year fixed rates are still relatively cheap. I mean, very cheap, actually.
Now, I'm going to give each of you a quick fire question. Keep those answers brief, guys. Adam, is there anything that could derail this demand for medical services?
With the onslaught of social media and really the attention to detail that people have over their appearances, unless there's some really bad news about the products being used, I can't imagine medical services doing anything but getting stronger and stronger.
Anthony, if you were thinking 2-year fix or 5-year fix, which would you be going for?
I think the reality of that question is based more about what you are doing. So I think you have to think years ahead, whether you're moving, whether you need cash to do renovations or for other uses. And I think look to try and fix something as early as you possibly can. 6 months beforehand is generally where we want to start talking to people nowadays. The lender will probably only contact you sort of 90 days out.
Thank you, Adam and Anthony, for those insights into a fast-changing sector. And thank you also, Dominic. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where, again, we'll be talking about a key trend in the property market.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.